With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. The use of drones in agriculture gets boost from a new legislation. Farmers will soon face fewer obstacles in getting approved to use drones for aerial applications thanks to a bill signed in law last week by Governor Gavin Newsom. This bill will modernize the California Department of Pesticides certification process. Growers of various commodities have touted the technology's ability to improve worker safety, lower labor costs, and boost crop yields. However, farmers say an outdated regulatory process has made it difficult for them and their employees to get licensed to use the drones to spray pesticides and biological treatments. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. In today's Ag News from AgNet West, the disagreeing opinions between environmentalists and agricultural stewards of the land. More after the break. Andrew Genasi, San Joaquin County Farm Bureau Executive Director, shares how the environmentalists' opinions differ from that of an agriculturalist and how they can be damaging to the agriculture industry.
Like I said, it's when they decide that, oh, you're going to do it this way because I believe that this is the only way to do it. You know, so I think there are some out there who feel that we've, you know, ruined the environment, that we're continue to ruin the environment. We've destroyed the Delta. We've destroyed, you know, the valley where you hear people talk about farming in a desert, and they wholeheartedly believe that we should not be farming here. Mm-hmm. Now that is a small group, but that a group is out there. They can play on the emotions. We've seen it a number of times with legislation, the Prop 2, Prop 12. Stuff like that. I mean, who wouldn't want to save these poor animals? They can make an emotional argument, which we always try and counter with the logical, like, look, we take care of our animals because if you're abusing your animal, you get an inferior product. And honestly, with the profit margins we have now, you can't afford to have an inferior product. You have to take care of your animals. You know, there's a reason. You know, you talk about the dairy. My family used to dairy, and there's a reason we had a nutritionist out there, and there's a reason we had a vet out there every week. You know, just to check and make sure everything's going right and well, and we're taking care of the animals because, you know, that's our livelihood was based on that. So we, you know, the original environmentalists, in my opinion, are the farmers and ranchers and dairymen in California. But there are other people who look at it and go, you know, the species like a Delta smelt is disappearing. Like they want to fix that problem. Now, we disagree on how these problems should be fixed. A lot of people think it's straight up flow, which would go back to water rights. They want unimpaired flows through the rivers. The ag and most irrigation people seem to believe that we need to fix the environment that was destroyed going clear back to gold mining. Mm-hmm. Many of these rivers were dredged and the ecology was completely changed. We think we can do a lot better by fixing the environment for the animals rather than just mandating flows and then rubbing our hands together and walking away, because we've been doing that for 20 years and it just keeps getting worse.
And now here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
Reports indicate that fruit damage from thrips could be affecting 30% of the citrus crop. Citrus farm advisor Sandeepa Gautam explained some of the ideas as to why citrus thrips have been increasingly harder to control in recent years.
A lot of the PCAs reported that many materials that would have more days out of usually 2 weeks only give them about 5 days efficacy. It's all a numbers game. When there is too many of them, getting 80% efficacy is not enough. And I think that's what happened this year with the thrips population. And another point is, yes, we have resistance issue with some of the compounds like pyrethroids, bathroid danitol, and others, which has already been sown. And a lot of that, those compounds went into tank mixing for thrips control early in the season as well. And pyrethroids have been known to aggravate thrips so that they lay more eggs. That might have been another contributing factor. And obviously, yes, there is resistance to OPs and carbamates. We have seen resistance to Delegate spinosyn insecticides. And also there have been some reports about cross-resistance to abamectin, which is, again, one of the compounds in Minectopro. We are doing some research to collect data. We don't have any concrete data to show that, yes, there is cross-resistance, but there seems to be some trend because we're seeing that the products are not working as well as they used to.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
If your soil could talk, what would it say? If it's healthy, it may already be saying some good things about your future. Because farmers who use soil health building systems that include no-till, cover crops, and diverse species and rotations report greater productivity, profitability, and resiliency to weather extremes. Learn more about what your soil is saying about its health and your future. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, USDA Economic Research Service Administrator Spiro Stefanow went over some key points in the nation's ag economy at the recent AgriPulse Ag Outlook Forum, starting with spending on nutrition programs.
The first one here is the Food Nutrition Assistance Landscape. And this is an annual report we do. This came out in late June. And, if you're interested in this area, it's a pretty comprehensive report. You know, there were 15 domestic food and nutrition assistance programs that affect millions of Americans. And they account for over two-thirds of USDA's annual budget. So in response to the pandemic, USDA launched additional temporary programs and implemented numerous policy changes that expanded the scope and coverage of existing programs. Together, these programs contributed to $183 billion in spending on food and nutrition assistance in fiscal year 2022. So this is based on preliminary data from USDA's Food and Nutrition Service, and this report highlights the nature of our assistance program, that $183 billion is actually 6% lower in inflation-adjusted dollars than the prior year. And the decrease was primarily driven by lower spending on the pandemic electronic benefit transfer program. Over 41 million people are participating in the SNAP program, and that's actually down just under 1% from the prior fiscal year. And we have the National School Lunch, other aspects to acquire food, other opportunities, National School Lunch Program, School Breakfast Program, and the others listed there. And those combined offered almost nine and a half million meals. And so it's quite a major part of what we do here at USDA.
For farmers, he talked about USDA's farm income forecast.
And this is looking at financial status of the farm economy. And ERS's farm income statistics also inform the ag contribution to the U.S. GDP estimates that come out. What we found here is when we adjust for inflation, net farm income forecast decreased about 25% in 2023 relative to 2022, which was a very high year. But even on balance, a 20-year average has a U.S. Farm economy above the historical average here of almost 23% above the historical average. So we had a record high in 2022, as I mentioned, and forecast here is to decrease by $23 billion. So still, can't go up every year.
And for the U.S. Ag Trade Outlook,
this was released at the end of August. August 31, and U.S. agricultural exports in the fiscal year 2024 are projected to be down $5.5 billion from the revised 23 forecast. The global economic outlook for calendar years 23 and 24 remain positive despite several economic challenges, and these challenges include continuing inflation concerns, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. Uncertainty regarding monetary policy, macroeconomic issues in China, and the Black Sea grain trade disruptions due to the Ukraine war.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, one policy priority of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association this year is to support the congressional reauthorization of the Animal Drug User Fee Act at FDA. Agnet Media's Will Jordan has more details.
The Animal Drug User Fee Act, better known as ADUFA, received reauthorization with the recent stopgap funding bill passed by Congress. Signed into law in 2003, reauthorization has been required every 5 years since then. ADUFA amends the Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act, allowing the FDA to collect fees dedicated to the animal drug review process. Through the ADUFA, the FDA also agrees to meet certain performance standards that are developed through mutual agreement with the animal health industry. Seen as beneficial for the livestock industry, I visited with NCBA's Ethan Lane for more.
Things tend to stack up at the end of the year and all get kind of packed into these year-end funding bills. One of the items that was up for reauthorization this year was the Animal Drug User Fee Act. That's the piece of legislation that allows for user fee generated positions at FDA to work on those all important, you know, drug approvals and innovations to ensure that cattle producers and animal drug users throughout animal agriculture have access to the latest and best technologies possible to keep their herds healthy and keep that supply chain moving. That bill usually gets reauthorized on time every 5 years, typically earlier in the year. It didn't on time this year, or at least it was looking to be in jeopardy because of an argument over a feed additive amendment that was in the Senate version and not in the House version. The clean ADUFA without that contentious amendment was added to the CR and passed, obviously, with that CR. So it really does take one of those variables off the table, which is very good news for cattle producers around the country.
For more information, visit agnetwest.com. For Agnet West, I'm Will Jordan.
Thanks, Will. In other news, cage-free hens comprise a growing percentage of the U.S. egg laying flock. At least that's according to USDA's Economic Research Service. The cage-free flock has grown as states have passed and enacted legislation banning confinement of hens, and as multiple retailers and food service providers have pledged to only source eggs from cage-free operations. Additional state bans are planned to take effect from this year all the way through 2026. Now, the cage-free laying egg flock increased by more than 10.5 million hens in the first 6 months of this year. That's according to USDA's monthly cage-free shell egg report. Cage-free hens increased as a proportion of the total U.S. laying flock, expanding from 36% in January to 38% in June. The non-organic cage-free flock accounted for most of the increase. And the National Dairy Herd Information Association is accepting applications for $1,500 scholarships. They'll go to third or fourth year College of Veterinary Medicine students. Applicants must be enrolled at a college that's accredited by the American Veterinary Medical Association Council on Education. Applications are due by December 31st. More information can be found on the National DHIA website. That's DHIA.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
GMOs? Genetically engineered? Bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Food price inflation is easing down into so-called normal levels. Gary Crawford has more coming up in today's This Land of Ours report.
The new Consumer Price Index shows that during September, prices for all items in the economy rose 0.2%, putting the inflation rate 3.7% higher than this time a year ago. However, for food at the grocery store,
we see things are looking a little better on the food side.
USDA economist Megan Schweitzer says that last month, grocery store food prices overall
rose by 0.1% in September. And they were 2.4% higher than a year ago.
And that 2.4% number, that is significant.
2.4% is right in line with what food prices for food at home have changed over the past 20 years.
That's considered a normal rate of food price inflation. Normal. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
And I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McGowan. Tax legislation that went into effect in 2018 is set to expire at the end of 25. For many, this could have a significant impact starting in 26. Do you have a plan in place if the tax law changes dramatically at that time? The 2017 tax law is scheduled to sunset at the end of 2025. If Congress allows that to happen, how might it impact you? For starters, tax rates will increase, and those currently in the 12% federal bracket will see a 25% increase in their tax rate. And the standard deduction will be reduced, but personal exemptions will be restored. However, the child tax credit will be cut in half and eliminated entirely for some families. For homeowners, the current limit on the mortgage interest deduction will be removed. The 2017 law removed the penalty for not getting government health insurance, but that will be restored starting in 26, as will the deduction for state and local taxes. In addition, the lower limit on charitable deductions will be reinstated. And for businesses that aren't corporations, the 20% deduction on business income will go away. The estate tax exemption will be essentially cut in half, so for larger estates, making gifts now might make some sense. It might be a good time to start thinking about changes that could occur starting in 26 and putting a good plan in place to handle what could happen. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McGowan.
Dairy producers have had their share of challenges in recent years. That has led the Agriculture Department to introduce programs designed to mitigate losses to dairy growers. Recently, the Farm Service Agency conducted sign-up for a new weather-related loss program.
The milk loss program is a program that helps producers offset economic loss that they had who had no other choice but to dump their milk during disasters.
According to Farm Service Agency Acting Deputy Administrator John Burge,
it allows eligible dairy operations to get payments for the milk that was dumped without compensation from the commercial milk market due to a qualifying weather event. And this particular rule that we just adopted is for events in 2020, 2021, and 2022.
And the definition of weather qualifying event under the Milk Loss Assistance Program?
Some of the qualifying disasters that we would take into account for this include blizzards, wildfires, hurricanes, derechos, excessive heat, and winter storms, a few others as well.
Organic dairy producers have also received two rounds of payments through a program known under the acronym ODMAP.
The Organic Dairy Marketing Assistance Program was established to help mitigate the volatility and higher input costs and transportation costs of organic dairy.
Looking at the payment breakdown,
we put out payments back in August or so. We paid out about $15 million, and then the second payment that we've announced will give out an additional $5 million to producers in that part of the industry.
Burge adds that ODMAP complements other dairy assistance programs, including USDA's flagship dairy margin coverage and its supplemental DMC option. He adds that producers that had DMC for the first 7 months of 2023 receive program payments based on the trigger points for the income over feed margin. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
What are the upcoming possibilities for new revenue streams for farmers? That question was posed during the recent AgriPulse Ag Outlook Forum. National Corn Growers Association lead economist Krista Swanson says a new type of aviation fuel is one.
Our market development action team recently had a study done, and you know, as we look over the next 5 years of potential for sustainable aviation fuel, the trend yield growth that we can expect from corn alone could fill that demand for sustainable aviation fuel over the next 5 years, but we have to have the modeling that allows for that to happen.
She also discussed value-added products for exports.
Corn exports are not only in the form of corn as the grain, but also the opportunities that exist for expanding exports of value-added products like ethanol and, you know, our meat products. And so that's going to be really important for our industry too.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
History shows lower October USDA production estimates continue even lower in November. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report to begin an interesting second half of October. Heavy rain in the western and central belt over the weekend will delay harvest more than a day or two. And now we hear wind damage reported in parts of Nebraska, South Dakota, southern Minnesota, and western Iowa. When USDA lowers yields in October, history shows they often lower them again in November as harvest results are better known. All that said, we don't see a spike higher, corn, soybeans, or wheat, but prices will be at a top of a new range that's set. Argentine wheat is now rated 42% poor to very poor. World wheat carryover now the lowest since 2015. That will add support to wheat futures here. This is the bottom line report. Mississippi River levels are at an all-time low for the second year in a row. In addition to slow barge traffic, low water is now allowing salt water from the Gulf to flow further upstream in Louisiana. That threatens drinking water and wildlife. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day and a profitable week ahead.
It's called the George Miller Memorial Scholarship, named after a man who was an icon in the Holstein breed, an industry pillar within select sires for almost two decades, and a generous leader in many other breed associations. Vice President of Dairy Cattle Breeding for Select Sires, Jeff Ziegler, tells us what sparked the idea for the scholarship.
At Select, we tried to do our very best to remember the heritage and what success stories built the company. George is one of those true success stories, not only for Select Sires, but the industry in whole.
Hosted by the Holstein Foundation and awarded by Holstein Association USA, the soon-to-be annual scholarship is brand new in 2023. Among many contributions to the dairy industry on the national and global scale, George Miller's claim to fame was a specific bull he helped breed, Round Oak Rag Apple Elevation.
He was instrumental in breeding and developing and really putting Holstein breed onto a new path.
The already popular scholarship brought in a lot of interest right from the start.
We had 24 applicants in a short period of time. And kudos to the foundation for getting the word out there that this scholarship was even there. They did a marvelous job of social media presence in particular to get the word around, to get some quality kids in, and the application process and selection was very difficult.
Because the George Miller Memorial Scholarship was built to represent all he did for the industry, the chosen recipient needed to share the same passion for giving back. Kylie Conine, a junior at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, was awarded the first ever $1,000 scholarship during the recent National Holstein Convention.
I plan to enter the dairy industry in consultation of some manner, whether that be in genetics or nutrition. And so just kind of the whole concept and the aspect and the impact that Mr. Miller was able to make as a sire analyst for Select Sires, real life applying that within the dairy industry and other aspects.
Besides staying active in many junior Holstein activities, Kylie is proving how serious she is about the Holstein industry between school semesters.
This summer, I am an intern for Cargill Animal Nutrition, and so I'm working with a research project with their technical team, and I'm hoping to find correlations between rumination information with both production, health, and then also different nutrient values in their diet.
For future recipients, the partnership between the George Miller Memorial Scholarship and Holstein Association USA is a natural one.
George was a great ambassador for the Holstein Association in general. Really believed in the programs and services that the Holstein Association has offered, and would do his best to go out of his way to support the association.
Select Sires has been allocating funds for the scholarship from semen sales of a sire with George Miller in his name. Visit HolsteinFoundation.org to learn more. For Holstein Association USA, I'm Bob Cervera.
The nation's cooperative business model, especially as an important part of rural economies, is celebrated every October.
The National Cooperative Month has been around for almost 60 years.
Andrew Burke is the administrator of the Rural Utilities Service, a part of USDA's Rural Development Mission Area. RUS has been well over six decades partnered with cooperatives that brought essential electric and telecommunications infrastructure and services to rural citizens during that period. Yet,
throughout the Department of Agriculture, there are many other types that we deal with, and they count for about 2 million jobs.
Examples range from agriculture cooperatives to retail. In fact,
they're a great way to make all kinds of different things work, whether it's energy or healthcare, food, financial services, telecommunication.
Annually, the Agriculture Secretary issues a proclamation declaring October as National Cooperative Month. And for 2023, the theme of this year's observance is owning our identity.
What we want to do this month is really celebrate that identity that they have and the way that they serve communities. It involves more than 30,000 cooperatives of all different types.
So for those not familiar with the cooperative model of business, whether rural or urban oriented,
essentially the big pieces are that a cooperative is owned by its members. There's a democratic process, so the members come in and vote. And it's been around for a long time, and it looks out for people, and it's nonprofit.
And since it is member owners and or businesses who use the services of the cooperative,
then it is looking out for the best need of the people and the businesses it serves.
Administrator Burke also notes the historic and economic significance of rural infrastructure co-ops.
These rural electric co-ops serve about half of the landmass of America, which is around 42 million people. But what's really critical is that it's about 93% of the nation's persistent poverty counties, which means that these cooperatives are serving people who really need that nonprofit, looking out for the best economic interest of their members.
Also,
we also have a proud history with telephone cooperatives, who are now often telecommunications cooperatives, because that was the way that people on farms and around rural America got their first telephone service as well.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do we have GMOs? Actually, we've been modifying crops for thousands of years to prevent crop loss from pest and weather damage, to grow more food on less land, even to improve nutrition. Today, GMOs are developed for the same reasons. With genetic engineering, scientists can change and improve crops more easily and quickly. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. Last year was a record year for dairy exports, but this year it slowed down due to market fluctuations in different regions of the globe. Alex Peterson is the chairman of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. He says USDEC has been working to grow markets in niche areas to diversify dairy's global portfolio. But first, he walks us through the export numbers for 2023 so far.
Mexico has been doing phenomenal. Best year ever, record to Mexico. Other parts of the world have slowed, have been a little slower to come out of the pandemic and recovery. And Southeast Asia, there's some issues on tourism going on there. So it is a little slower to rebound. But all in all, the trend line of U.S. dairy exports from 25 years ago when it was 3 or 4% to 17% now, we are right where we want to be, and we're seeing wins all over the place, despite small headwinds here and there, which that's the way it is in any market you're working to get the most value out of.
As Peterson said, the headliners are that Mexico is buying a lot of U.S. dairy, while Southeast Asia has seen some slowdown. So USDEC is targeting some new markets with specific products. Peterson recently visited Japan to market cheese to a particular chef.
Just a tremendous amount of possibilities in Japan. A, there's a bunch of people. B, they like cheese. They like good cheese. And one of the ways we're building demand for U.S. cheese in Japan is the Hattori Culinary School. So training chefs and culinary students on USA cheese. The over 1,000 different varieties we have, from the most, you know, kind of exquisite artisan niche cheese to the most versatile, you know, universal type commodity cheese that we offer. This culinary school is just a phenomenal way to reach chefs that are emerging in the market, in a market where food service is a huge part of what goes on. And the master chef of that school, Hattori, was the original Iron Chef. If you remember the Iron Chef show, it was going on in Japan for 20 years, and he was kind of the origin of it. So a very high level, high class, but it's the same principle whether you're building demand domestically or internationally. You have to get the people that are making the moves on what products are being consumed and influence the influencers. And so going to chefs and then also going into the retail space and training the people behind the counter that are selling dairy products about the quality of USA cheese and the attributes that it brings, so that when somebody says, oh, what should I get here? They say, oh, you should try this US cheese.
But the work doesn't stop at the Iron Chef. Peterson has also been in Southeast Asia spreading the word that dairy can answer protein needs of the population.
Singapore also is a place where we have a kind of a brick and mortar hub for USA dairy exports. Because it's 12 time zones away, it's good to have people on call 24/7, essentially. And that market is such a hub for all of Southeast Asia, where we see a tremendous opportunity for growth. We're talking about 16 countries that have 600 million people that are looking to increase the nutrition that they're intaking. And there's no denser, higher quality nutrition than dairy nutrition. And they're starting to figure out ways to, A, try our products that we have kind of demonstrated that we do incredibly well, but also we as US DEC are helping our domestic processors figure out how to adapt their products into how they are already consuming food. And so if we can take their, you know, morning drink and get them to put dairy protein isolates in it to really beef up that nutrition for immunity for an aging population or whatever it is, that's a win as well. So just finding ways to connect dots, build relationships, and provide a great dairy experience for customers.
As he alluded to, marketing dairy isn't all about selling cheese to restaurateurs. USDEC is marketing everything from common dairy products to specific ingredients such as dairy protein isolates. This is where the specialists come in. USDEC staff works to better understand cultural food and flavor needs in order to introduce dairy components that make sense to a region.
Customer service is a big part of what we do, and part of that is understanding the consumer. And if the consumer in the Philippines wants just a protein boost in what they're already consuming, then obviously there's a dairy powder product answer there somewhere. We have technical experts that can really connect those dots and bridge those gaps and figure out what works well. And it takes experts just like we have here in the States to say, well, in this type of product, you need, you know, whether it's WPC or WPC 80 or isolate or permeate. And these are all technical questions I don't know the answers to, but we have those experts in market that understand what will work, what won't work, and taste profiles are different, you know, everywhere in the world. And so understanding what those local markets want currently, and maybe what they would be open to taking in and kind of building that bridge to the future, is just a tremendous opportunity.
That was Alex Peterson, chairman of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, offering up some of the details of how the council is trying to grow U.S. dairy presence around the world. This includes targeting new buyers in Southeast Asia and maintaining current relationships in countries like Mexico. And while the 2023 export numbers won't top what we saw last year, Peterson says the trend line still looks good, and he's optimistic about what's to come. NAFB contributed to that report.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
AgTech advances are helping growers to work through a variety of challenges. Director of Mechanized Equipment Development for DiRigo Brothers of California, Andy Holt, said that labor is an area they've been working to address through mechanization.
Whether it be a shortage, whether it be the integration of technology into helping improve those ag labor jobs, some of our successes have been in that, in looking at what we have people out in the field doing, and a lot of that is walking through the field, bending over, a lot of repetitive motion, and really that's the big thing to address right off the bat. One of the things we look at is get people off the ground. And that's literally what we're doing in a lot of cases, is developing a harvest platform. From there, we can add a certain amount of maybe just mechanized solution, or from there we can go to a more automated approach. For instance, broccoli rob is a crop that we have, and it's a crop that's bunched. It's harvested by hand. We've developed a harvester through a very mechanized approach to cut that crop, bring that crop up to a platform where it is still hand packaged and bunched and then put into a carton and then stacked. But everybody on that platform is in an upright, neutral posture. So that's an example where we've gone full scale from adopting the proper variety to adopting the proper farming technique, and then also having the engineer there working on the equipment. So that's probably a really good example, full circle, of what our mechanization group does.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Fun awards over $1 million to U.S. farmers and ranchers. American Farmland Trust recently awarded more than $1 million to 110 farmers around the country through the Brighter Future Fund. The grant announcement came out on National Farmers Day that recognizes the importance of American farmers. This year, AFT received more than 1,500 applications from 48 states, which is an all-time high and almost doubled the number of applications from last year. Priority was given to applicants who were starting their agricultural pursuits, veterans, women, or those with limited resources. Funds were allocated for both professional services and equipment or infrastructure costs, with a focus area including improving farm viability, accessing farmland, and adopting regenerative agricultural practices. AFT awards grants to farmers and ranchers to advance its mission to protect farmland, promote sound farming practices, and keep farmers on the land. The Brighter Future Fund was launched in 2020 to help farmers around the U.S. start, grow, and sustain farms despite a number of challenges. And AFB contributed to that report.
Hosted by the Organic Produce Network and Western Growers, the Organic Growers Summit is coming up November 29th and 30th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey Hotel and Spa. Event manager for OGS, Keegan Roos, said they've got a full program for this year's summit.
We have exhibitors from soil amendment companies to ag tech, food safety, packaging, equipment exhibitors, and they'll all be connecting with organic field production staff, supply chain managers, pest management advisors, and food safety experts. We have some great ed sessions planned this year, some great speakers discussing, you know, the strengthening organic enforcement rule that's coming up, that compliance deadline. We have some sessions on regenerative farming and what that means for organic. We're going to be talking about the value of AI, as well as sustainable pest management, and going over obstacles and opportunities in relation to using ag tech. And just this week, we announced that our annual Grower of the Year award will be Rod Braga from Braga Fresh. We're really excited to award him and just kind of honor his work in farming and organics and all the success that he's brought to California agriculture.
More information on the event is available at organicgrowersummit.com. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
NARA launches Organics Recycling Information Campaign.
NARA, or the North American Renderers Association, just released an infographic on organics recycling and how recycling food waste with rendering creates value and ensures sustainability. The graphic is an educational tool for those who may not be familiar with the rendering process, the sustainability, and the economic benefits of rendering food waste. With the passing of California Senate Bill 1383 back in 2022, which requires local governments to collect and recycle organic waste, NARA felt it was critical to release this information publicly. Roughly 50% of a meat animal is considered inedible by North Americans. This leaves a lot of leftover material that would end up in landfills and increase greenhouse gas emissions. By diverting this organic meat from landfills and sending it to rendering facilities, it ensures this otherwise wasted material, as well as used cooking oil, is safely, hygienically, and sustainably processed into safe and clean rendered material for use in new products. So nothing is wasted. The graphic is available on the NARA website. You can get there by visiting nara.org. The National Association of Farm Broadcasters contributed to that report.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.